It's the Tiltcast, episode 343. Bacon is the perfect bread, it really is.
And this week, guys, we're going to talk Octopath Traveler, Banner Saga 3, Telltale's Guardians of the Galaxy, and No Man's Sky next. Stay tuned.
Wrap my tongue around and suck in that mayo and tomato. And we're back. Finally.
It is time. It is almost 10 fucking p.m.
Oh, well, you know.
Oklahoma, USA.
Friday.
Things happened. Stuff happens.
Friday.
What's the date?
July 27th.
Thank you.
We're back.
We're 27th. What? Definitely doing regular episodes.
Yes.
Woohoo!
Oh, man. It's... Oh, man. I'm stoked. I just love having extra new techie things to, you know, to work with, and
we've got a clamp mounted boom stand now.
Yeah, yeah.
With the mic on the shock mount.
Pop filters and happy days, man. It's fucking amazing.
Puttica.
What the fuck is a puttica?
That's to make you enunciate certain consonants.
Puttica.
So when you
douchebag,
kind of like watermelon rutabaga for background
Benedict Cumberbatch.
So if you ever have speech therapy lessons,
right,
you'll do putticas.
Speaking of Benedict Cumberbatch. I'll be honest, this week's been really stressful. So
that's why you're a little bit on edge.
Something I did one day this week was I just literally sat on Jimmy Kimmel's YouTube and watched Mean Tweets.
He got excited.
Yeah. And watched Mean Tweets.
Watched Mean Polls.
It was just Mean Girls.
This dude rips Benedict Cumberbatch on Twitter, but he spells his first name wrong.
Benedict.
Benedict's pretty much like, it's actually spelled. He spells his name and goes, dumbass.
Dumbass. Awesome.
Gave him some strange, huh?
Gave him some strange.
Those fingers are magic. So, things and stuff.
Stuff and things, man.
Oh, my God. all I can say is Justin's happy, Jason's not so happy, and I am pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
So, things.
Things stuff and stuff. It's been a really interesting week. There's a lot of stuff going on in the game world right now that we'll go into in the news segment.
Yes.
It'll be in a later episode. We probably won't go a full 3 hours.
No. Well, we don't normally go 3 hours.
Jason will fucking murder us if we do.
He just gives us this look. And it's a look.
I gave Rusty a look when he walked through the door.
And I told him to fucking back off. Salty ass.
You know, we're both wearing Deadpool shirts.
Yes, I know. It's amazing.
I'm just wearing black.
So yeah, but yours is much better than mine.
It's funny.
The Merc with a Mouth.
Deadpool on a taco.
Because.
Well, I like tacos!
Oh my God. This guy, he's super happy.
And he's not talking about the food.
He's just.
What's wrong with tacos?
You know, fucking tacos are amazing.
Tacos are great. I love tacos. I'm going to eat some more tacos tomorrow. I've got those low carb, like Mama Lupe's.
Yeah.
Of, like, taco shell things.
Yeah.
I'm going to put taco stuff in them.
My God. He is super giddy. Oh, my God. This guy. He's dumb. I saw the thing where you make the provolone rounds into tacos by baking them. And I was like, I don't know.
Cheesy tacos.
Cheesy tacos.
You know what?
But they're all cheese.
Just do bacon weave. Cut it in a circle.
I've got fucking 2 pounds of bacon. I am doing that this weekend.
Bend that shit up and bake it with it up. Done.
Done. Perfect.
Done.
Bacon weave can go. Bacon weave is the perfect bread.
It is.
Bacon is the perfect bread.
Bacon weave is
bacon the perfect weave bread. Is the perfect bread substitute. Oh, like, man.
It does everything.
When you can't have bread.
Just think about your BLTs. But you don't have to really worry about the B.
So we right? just like add bacon weave and just add lettuce and tomato and mayo in the middle and then just bite into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. That sounds fucking delicious.
It does.
But it sounds expensive as shit for a sandwich.
Not really.
Like a $7 sandwich.
So?
You pay that for a BLT at a restaurant. Just saying.
Hey. And you can make it yourself. You can fucking smoke that shit.
Speaking of smoking.
Smoking.
I smoked some chicken tonight. It was actually really, really fucking good.
I told you to do that, man. Yeah. It's fucking great.
Did you do the whole chicken or?
No, I just did some chicken thighs.
Well, you gotta bone stuff in, a right? beer can up its ass and fucking smoke it for hours.
Well, I went to Perry's and I did their special meat work we were talking about last time. And they had chicken thighs and I was like, oh, I can smoke those. And I was just
walk by any meat, you know, any meat thing and be like, I can smoke that.
Yeah, I can smoke. Well, and I have my favorite things to smoke. Phrasing. This guy. If it's a dick joke, I'm just going to laugh. I'm just sorry. I can't help it.
He's super happy. Wink, nod.
So.
Thumbs up.
So I smoked that for, I had a date tonight, and which is why I initially delayed, but I did that, smoked chicken because I figured it was something I could just kind of, it wouldn't take too long, and the girl that I'm dating makes food way better than I do, but I smoke food, so that's something I know I do actually do well. In the culinary arts. So it only takes about 3 or 4 hours to smoke chicken. And I tried something new. So I smoked it over some cherry wood. And I figured out something that this may be common knowledge or may not be. But I've been always trying to find different ways to bring out more smoke in the food that I'm making. And so I took the cherry wood, like little chunks. And I wrapped it in super thick tinfoil. And threw that on the coals instead. Just like 2 or 3 chunks at a time. And then I took that after it really got going, and I moved it right under the chicken. Just let that smoke just rise up. And I had smoke rings in my fucking chicken.
Awesome.
You can do that. The other super effective way to do it is to actually soak your wood chips for about 8 to 10 hours before you go.
I didn't even think about
that. Go to use them.
The girl that I'm seeing just has a...
And that will generate a ton of smoke.
She has a schedule where sometimes I don't know if we're doing something or not, so if I kind of have to plan on the fly a little bit, so I was like, what can I smoke today? Because I was going to smoke ribs, you know, for myself, and I probably could have gotten away with that pretty easy.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, well, I got a little bit of notice, so I'm going to go ahead and just... We're going to make chicken right now. Throw it on the grill. We're going to smoke this shit. But at the end, I actually did the crutch, and I wrapped the chicken in foil. I threw a little pat of butter in there with some garlic and a little bit of salt and wrapped that bitch after it had been smoking and kind of getting a little bit dry. And that was fucking great. Great.
Yeah, ain't
I like great. Great. Like, it was just great. Splashy.
So,
when you bite into chicken and just kind of swoosh.
It was
like moist. It's molasses in your mouth. Moist in your mouth. Yeah. And I'm making a grabbing motion with moist.
I don't know why you're doing that.
Because it's like splashy like a water balloon.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, splashy.
So not to get super foodie, but for those of you who normally don't cook, anytime you grill or
Instagram this
or smoke chicken. If it is not the whole chicken and you don't have the chicken stuff, you will need to wrap it and introduce some liquid, either in the form of a high heat liquid, either in the form of butter, like what Justin did, or in a broth, because that's the best way to.
Well, the only other thing I had was apple cider vinegar, and that would have tasted good on chicken.
Open up a can of beer
and stuff it up the chicken's ass.
And stuff it up.
I did that one time, and it didn't work as well as I wanted.
Okay, so what you have to do is you have to take the beer.
You got
to
drink half of it.
Open it. You got to drink half of it.
I know.
Shove it up the ass.
I did that.
Just set it upright.
Take a knife. That's all you got to do. Poke some holes in the side of it.
You do have to put a couple holes in it, yeah.
That's fair.
Just help venting so that the moisture is all not trying to come up
the neck.
The neck of the...
It'll make the breasts moist, mm-hmm. but that's about it.
Giggity. But then I completely forgot about a side, so she took some, I don't know what it's called, she's going to correct me later, I'm sure, but like I was going to just grill some zucchini. I was like, that's good, and that's kind of classic, right?
Right.
Like, it's the only vegetable I had in there, so I was like, I'll just do this with zucchini.
I've got zucchini. You're going to get zucchini.
And she knows, and she knows I'm doing keto, so I was like, well, I mean, I don't know what to do now, because the chicken's done, but there's no zucchini. And then she put Parmesan cheese on the zucchini mm-hmm. with some butter mm-hmm. and some red pepper flakes and garlic and something else, and fried it up in a pan, and it was fucking scrumptious.
Of course it was.
And zucchini doesn't take that long to cook.
I don't know what that is. She said it was something Italian.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take your word for it.
But yeah, that was a really good side. So
sweet.
Foodiness aside, like, I'm eating way too rich of food. Like, today was the first day I really attempted to go low carb, and I'm going to try to keep doing that for a while, because, you know, pants are starting to, we're starting to get a little bit tight.
I hear you.
Like, and it's weird, like, as soon as you go low carb after not being low carb, though, like, you instantly de-bloat. Like,
yes.
Like, almost, you lose, like, an inch on your waist almost immediately. And I'm in that weird in-between size, and I bought the size that I thought I would need today because I was in a rush, and it just...
It's not the right size.
Off.
It's not the right size. It's good. It's a good problem to have, also a bad problem, because I hate fucking clothing shopping. I just hate it.
Well, I'm too lazy to go back and switch them out for something a half size. Like, I'm not going to find a half size unless I go get it tailored.
Right. Just wear a better belt.
Wear a better belt. That's pretty much where I'm at right now.
So,
but...
Yeah.
Next on the agenda, though, is we're going to plan our birthday bash, and I'm going to find a pork belly the week before. Sweet. And I will make sure we have pork belly that week.
Awesome.
Woohoo!
Awesome.
I missed the pork belly that last time, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I didn't do pork belly last time, so the one we did the other day.
No, I'm just talking about the last time you made one for a gathering.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was pretty good.
It was really good.
And that was my first time making one. So now that I have some tricks up my sleeve, I'm sure I'm making some pork belly.
Yeah. Let's see if you can not burn the skin this time.
Yeah. Well, I've got a trick for that, too.
Okay. All right.
We're going to crisp the skin.
And then, all right.
Or we'll foil it if it's getting a little too dry.
I'll trust you. But, I mean, it was good. But it was a little dark.
Yeah, the skin was a little dark. You can't make it quite like a brisket.
No, you can't. But I'm looking forward to it, and you know, we still need to find out what time and date and whatnot, so that we can get that rolling and get this shit on. Do you need me to bring brats that time too?
Maybe.
Okay,
we'll talk about it later.
All right. Yeah. I love making beer brats, man. It's fucking amazing.
Especially, like I said, if you buy them, I'll do them up.
I like the way that I do them too.
I know, but I'm saying I can.
he can get most of it ready.
I know exactly how you boil them though, because you and I learned the same way. So I can boil them and actually smoke them instead of grilling them at the last minute.
That's fine.
By the time I'm done, smoked brats are infinitely better than grilled brats.
Or we could do just basic ass hot links.
This is a southerner and a northerner going at the same time.
I got some of those Perry's.
No, see, if you take a bratwurst and you smoke it, it's barbecuing. Hot links are just grilling. That's no fun.
Hot links are basically just hot dogs.
I've smoked them before.
Yeah, they're just
hot links are just spicy hot dogs.
Spicy hot dogs, yeah.
You could wrap them in bacon. I did that once.
You can wrap bratwurst in bacon.
You can wrap anything in bacon.
Oh, yeah.
You can.
Oh, yeah.
Dirty baby neighbor, wrap it in bacon.
Oh!
Oh! Fuck.
It'd still be kind of hard to get through the silica in that. I'm just saying.
Okay, maybe not everything.
I mean, that reminds me. So, like, I fed the dog some fat trimmings the other day.
Yeah.
And she looked really fucking sad when I got home. Like, the tail was between the legs. She was staring at me. She wasn't doing the dog dance. I was like, what'd you do?
Mm-hmm.
She just went straight to the door. She knew she had to go outside.
Uh-oh.
And I walked in the hall, and it was just like, it was just pudding. It was horrible.
It looked like
a biscuit, but like it was just formed enough. It was a little square of gelatinous, disgusting bullshit. It was the worst thing ever. And
this is why I don't have pets.
I had to get two paper plates, you know, to pick it up because it was not going to. I tried to pick it up with toilet paper and it just wasn't happening.
Full body condom.
And I was just like, ugh, I can't do it. So, like, you know, I have to, like, turn my face away.
So, being the dog person you were raised to be, I'm surprised you don't remember that you're not really supposed to give fat trimmings to a dog older than about two.
Well, yeah, she's got a sensitive stomach, so.
After about two, once they're fully matured, it's too rich for their stomach.
What happens to you when you first get on keto, man? What the fuck are you doing to this dog?
I just lubed up her colon is what I did.
Grease paves the way.
Came back up.
And then Jesus takes the wheel.
Install handlebars on the toilet.
that was not fun.
No, I bet not. I tend to stay away from that as much as I can.
Aside from everything going right for once, and having money left over for once.
Yeah.
I mean, I got that new TV. I talked about it that I was what I was gonna get, and I ended up getting that TCL P15.
Fucking A. It looks fantastic, dude.
It looks as good as my TV. I mean,
I paid about $200 less.
I mean, the big difference between your TV and my TV is how it's backlit. There's a little bit more darkness to the corners on your TV, but I mean, it's also almost half the cost of what my TV was.
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna. I was chatting with Boston on Facebook. We were talking about it. It was the same one he was looking at getting for his house too. So it And I mean, what's the name of that tech guy that we were both talking about earlier today?
Linus.
Yeah.
Like, he's actually the one that sold me on the fucking TV. Like, watching his videos, but also watching a shitload of other videos on this year's P-Series TCL. And the HDR works really well. After
seeing that TV, I'm not going to pay the Samsung premium again.
No. It looks really good. There are some things, because I kind of nitpick some things.
It is white. It is all about availability. So right. Like when I picked up this TV, or when I picked up my TV, Best Buy was not carrying these on the regular. You know, I would have had to go online to pick it up. They just recently started carrying these on the regular, right?
Right, and it's this model that I got right now came out in May. Yeah. So it's a really late model TV. But, I mean, you know, HDR content like I've shown you with Far Cry.
I mean, your HDR looks just as good as mine.
And I've noticed a little bit of wizardry when I'm playing, like I've shown you guys, Banner Saga, which I'll go into here in a minute, which that output on the PC, because the card I got and maybe because of the cable, is an HDR. And right. PC still has some weird issues with processing HDR. But mm-hmm. HDR YouTube looks really fucking good. And then HDR games, like, I didn't even go into pulling up God of War, but God of War looks fucking stupid on it, too.
Is that a 970 or 970 Ti?
It might be a Ti. It might just be a 970. I don't know. I looked up, can it do HDR, and I saw a lot of controversy on whether it could or couldn't. Because apparently with, if just tech tip, if yeah. you go into Windows into display settings, right where you choose what display you're going to use or what resolution you're going to use, it should have a little ticker for HDR. Mine did not. And so you go into the video output settings, also in the settings tab, and there's a spot in there for video playback. And if it's grayed out, it means that your display
no.
doesn't support it.
HDR is completely dependent on HDMI 2.0, and the GTX 970 has a 1.2.
That's what that's
display port.
So it's not.
So and it barely does 4K to begin with. Yeah. And what I mean by barely does 4K is that I can play. They are billions in 4K, but I can't play pretty much anything else. Rusty showed off a game on Switch, and we might as well just jump into it, because this is probably going to be one of the most popular games this year.
Octopath Traveler.
Yeah, Octopath Traveler, which is a 2.5D, 2D side-scrolling, old-school-ass RPG, right?
It is. It really brings back the
It really idea. Looks like an upgraded Tactics. I mean, almost.
Yeah, so it's got the same kind of style for the characters as the old SNES games, and that's really where it brings, you know, where it's, you know, it's bringing in a lot of those fans, but it also has this 2.5D, you know, semi-open world. It's basically a bunch of different paths that you can take.
Is it got a job system or?
It does. It does have a job system. Each character has its has a specific thing. So there's 8 characters where the Octo in Octopath Traveler is. Each character has their own story. And before release, they had done a demo where you could actually play the first hour of or so, which is the. Basically, kind of like the origin story for those characters, right? Or what's setting them off on their path. And where I'm at in the game is basically I'm going around and I'm collecting all 8 of the characters. Each one of those characters has their own move sets. So they have there's a rogue character that has the classic Final Fantasy style like thief, you know, stuff where they steel and can use daggers and swords. Each character has a set of weapons that they can do. So, you know, thief has the daggers and swords. the huntress has bow and arrow and an axe. I think the mage style characters, they only have the one weapon, which is a staff.
Gotcha.
But each one of the enemies has a weakness. So each enemy has a little shield with a number in it, and that is every time you hit them with a weapon that they're weak to, it's going to take a number off of their shield, their defense. And then once you get to 0 on that, it'll cause a break, which will stun that character for a turn. And the whole point of the combat is to understand where their weaknesses are, exploit that weakness, stun them so that they don't get off their bigger attacks, and you can kind of chain over the course of having 4 characters with different weapons, you can kind of work out the best way to attack a group of enemies. And you can have 1 or you could have 5 enemies, you know, per encounter. It does have random encounters, which is a throwback to those old days. It is a little grindy, because you do have to level each character up from 1. So as you're going around and collecting everybody, everybody starts at level one.
So this is where you've been when I've been looking to see if you're on Steam.
Right, right. This is, I've been playing Octopath Traveler on my TV. It looks great on the television. It's completely playable on the portable screen. I've been taking it to work with me and playing it on breaks.
I hit one of those random encounters just like walking around.
Right.
Just to,
right. And that's why I put you out and I loaded up the game and I set him off into the desert. So there's a number of different layers to this game. You can actually do a lot with each one of the characters. In town.
That looks fucking great.
Yeah. In town, you have the ability to talk to, you know, certain villagers or certain townspeople. And each one of the characters has a ability that they can do. Like the Huntress can provoke a random NPC in town, and it'll show you how difficult that that character is. But for her, provoking sets up a combat with that villager, and the only thing that she can use is the creatures that she has, you know, captured. So she's, you know, because she's a huntress, she'll capture things like Pokemon almost. And each one of those creatures has a specific kind of attack with different levels of power.
Can you choose those while you're in mid-battle so you can have different types of attacks?
Right. So the way she works is that's kind of her summon ability. So she will take a creature she's captured. She can only call it so many times, but she can use that creature for like a summon attack, and it will do whatever its specialty is. It turns out that that is one of the more powerful characters in the game. That just happens to be the one that I randomly chose as my starting character, but because she has the ability to get pretty much any type of creature with a specific kind of attack, she can really kind of mold herself to completely different situations and fights. Of course, she's really powerful just with the bow. But one of the things that you probably didn't see, if you're in combat...
I am.
Okay. One of the things that you can do while in combat, you'll notice right next to their name is a little point of light.
Right, I see it.
Okay, so those are called boost points. And if you use the R button, when you've got them selected, you can kind of almost make them go Super Saiyan. So what that boost point will do is it'll increase the power of whatever skill that you use if you use a normal skill. Or you could use the boost point in your normal attack, and it will attack a number of times. Like, if you use one boost point, you'll attack twice. Use two boost points, you'll attack three times. And so on. And that's how you break through armor on some of the larger creatures.
Right.
To do that, you use the boost point system to...
Just based off of what you just said.
Right, right. See?
Untouchable.
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 So use the boost point system to actually get through the defenses, and then use one of your other characters' boost points for a really massive hit. And you can do some real good damage on bosses and other, you know, bigger creatures. There are tougher creatures in this game.
Right.
I'm not super far into it. I'm still collecting the characters. And I haven't had a whole lot of time to really devote to it, but I have enjoyed every minute of it so far. I've loved the art style. The art style just is great.
The art style looks like that perfect mix of like a low res open world with, you know, like I said, like right. Chrono Trigger or
right.
or Tactics, you know, character models.
Yeah, the art style is what really sold me on the game. Like, I didn't know anything about how the game played or what the what the story was going to be. I know that it had a really weird name. Octopath Traveler is kind of an odd name to begin with, because you can't really glean much from it other than the fact that octo means eight, and that you have some feeling like that's going to be a part of the story.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I went into this completely blind, and the art style is the whole reason why I purchased it. What I got for that is a fairly solid RPG. It's not the perfect RPG, but it's fairly solid, and I really enjoy the combat. The combat really brings out the best part of this game, and the stories aren't shit. The individual characters, you actually kind of get into how why they're moving on from where they're at and why they're going to be traveling the world, and you just happen to be there, so they figure that this is a perfect time to travel with somebody else that's traveling,
right?
And you just continue on with that. It does have different acts, so I'm currently in act one for most of the characters. Each character has their own little story arc. All the other characters kind of go along and help.
Right.
The boss battles are like those enemies, only the bosses are way bigger.
Yeah.
And they have, very specific styles of attack, and you have to really work out the active time system. It is a turn-based RPG. But it does have an active the active style time. Let me think. Like some of the, Final Fantasy 7, 8 ish has that that bar with the the characters' portraits on it, and you can kind of see who's going to be attacking next, and you can use that to kind of work out the strategy as I need to break this. This character that's going to be doing a big attack, or try to prevent them from actually getting together and doing a bigger attack.
Right.
From what I've seen so far of the game, it is really good. It is kind of pricey. It is a full priced game on Steam, on Switch. It is only on Switch. But I think it's one of the better place, if not the perfect place for it.
Yeah.
It takes full advantage of the HD rumble features of the Joy-Cons. So when you're opening doors, it feels kind of, it has a different thing to it. If you open up a chest, you'll have some rumble feedback, and it is well built. I haven't seen a whole lot of bad things to it. It's fun. I mean, if you're into RPGs, like the old style SNES RPGs, do it.
I'm pretty impressed. I've been playing this while he's been talking, and it does a weird thing where it's uses depth of field and an isometric perspective to create a play space that looks very 3D with sprites overlaid on top of it.
Right, and like right now we're in a desert area, right, and the little additional bits of detail that you can get from just having like the sparkles in the sand,
they're using a lot of modern technology to overlay on a pixel art.
Right.
It's a really good looking game.
It's
just hyper stylized.
It's super fantastic. And once you haven't even gotten into the sound, cause I've had the sound turned down for the recording, of course. But the sound design for this game is really, really excellent. So as you're moving up in boost points, the characters will kind of get more excited. Like each character has their own little personality. But when you get 3 boost points on the warrior character, for instance, he will basically be surrounded by a big ball of blue energy, and he'll be standing up front, and he's like, my blade is unbending, and he will just go to fucking town. And I mean, after the first few times hearing that, it sounds cool the first few times, but there's not a whole lot of variation in what they say.
right.
But it still has that feeling, like you've got that the noise of almost going Super Saiyan and him just getting like a deeper voice going, I am going to fuck you up, you know.
That's what happens when I get in a fight. My voice gets a lot deeper. I'm just like, I'm gonna kill you.
And
say it again.
Yeah,
say it again. To my face. I'm Batman.
So it's got a lot of really cool things to it. And with RPGs, the sound design really has to be on point for me too. Things gotta sound punchy. The characters have to have a good voice. There is some voice acting in the game. The first hour is pretty much voice acted, but most of the other interactions are, you know, old school, read it, but they'll have like a contextual, like one liner. So you come up to a character and they will say something. They'll have a full like sentence, but they'll have a voice line come over it saying, say it isn't so, or understood, or something like that, where you read the whole thing, but there is a little bit of voice acting over top of each interaction, which I found was all right. It wasn't great, but, you know, it was all right.
So that's kind of, needless to say, that's probably going to keep you busy for a week or two, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not poop socking this. I'm letting this kind of, you know, be the time filler, because it is one of those games perfectly built for the Switch where you can do something, you know, get to a save point, save it, or put your Switch to sleep like I just did and come back to it later.
I didn't save anything, but
yeah, I just put it to sleep.
I figured you'd either roll back or you'd roll with what you got.
Right. And you can't really break the, you know, the encounters super bad. So like, even if you was to use some of my items, the items are fairly inexpensive, you know, in the game. So you can, you know, you can get,
I used your cheapest HP potion.
Right.
I figured it was the cheapest one because you had 25 of them.
Right. And you can, and I get those all, you know, all over the place. So,
call me impressed. I mean,
That's why I brought it over.
I might not buy a Switch immediately,
right? But
now that I have spending money, like, that's something I'm thinking about getting later this year, whether it be through work or through just plain old cash.
Yeah, the Switch, for me, for a while, after I finished Zelda, I really didn't actually spend a whole lot of time with the Switch after that, because I wasn't really impressed with anything else that came out. I mean, I'm probably one of the only people who owns a Switch and hasn't played the, you know, Super Mario Odyssey, because
I thought about doing that.
You know, it to me, I just didn't feel like playing a Mario game. And that's just a personal preference. I had other things that I wanted to play. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just said, I eventually will pick it up sometime.
Well, like, half the reason I haven't sold the Wii U yet was just because it has Virtual Console on it and Switch doesn't.
Right, and
I have a few games on Virtual Console that I don't want to give up.
And that's kind of a sticking point. If, you know, for pretty much anybody that has a Switch, they're just saying, why the hell aren't you putting a Virtual Console on there? You know the Switch would be perfect for Virtual Console. You know?
Oh, yeah, it would.
But you know, Nintendo, in its great wisdom, has not done any of that. I don't know why. I'm sure there's a marketing strategy behind it, but it makes no damn sense. And if I had to guess what the situation was, they want to do the collections. They want to send out and, you know, sell a half price game, like a $20-$30 game that has a collection of games, you know, like the Mega Man X collection, for instance.
Well, most of the games in the Virtual Console were about $4 or $5 anyway.
Right. And it doesn't, you know, for me, the way that I looked at the Virtual Console is, you know, Nintendo really hates people who play on ROMs.
and emulators. And they started cracking down recently. There were some things in the news that I saw that they had cracked down on some of the big, you know, ROM sites. But for me, it was like, would you rather us go to the ROM sites to be able to play these games or buy them legitimately for $5 on the virtual console?
For the amount of games that I'll actually play that are retro when I have time, it's going to be like 5 games.
Right. And I've got my favorites that I would like to, you know, like to have, you know, the way that I see it is if I've got it, you know, as a digital, as a license, then I would be able to just go back to it whenever I want to. Right. The way the technology is now. And that's the whole reason why, you know, I've got the Mega Man X collection. I haven't purchased it. It's, you know, but it's on the, you know, it's on the list to buy. I'm going to buy it. It's just, I haven't had time to.
Well, speaking of new stuff, I've been playing Banner Saga 3 now. Obviously, I haven't had time to really dive into it because it came out last night. But, it does some cool shit. Now, on top of it looking good. Actually, let me go back. So, Banner Saga is a game that I kickstarted a long time ago. I kickstarted it because it was a game being made by former BioWare employees. And they said they wanted to do something that had, like, Beauty and the Beast-style animation mixed with an RPG mixed with the Oregon Trail. And it's a pretty accurate description. You have a band of fantasy Vikings and Varl, which are, like, oxmen. And, basically travel along, you make decisions along the path, and then you get into these encounters. It's very Final Fantasy Tactics. They're on their last installment, which is 3, which is way darker than the last two already. About 4 hours in. It does a lot of what you're talking about with voice acting, so there's a lot of grunts and stuff like that while you're in combat. The scenes that are actually voiced are cutscenes. The voice acting in it is pretty top-notch. It's definitely not on the cheap. It's when they first started out, it was a PC-only release that moved to all the consoles, including iOS. And it is very much in the same boat right now. So when I was looking at it on the website earlier today, literally available for all the things. Like, maybe not iOS yet,
right?
But available for all the things. And the nice thing about that, too, and the reason I got it on PC again, is because I played the first two and had save files for those. And the save file transferred over. And what the save file... This game has a lot of replayability. And I say that because your encounters are a little bit different because they're random. And I'm not talking about just random combat encounters. I'm talking about random actual encounters. Where you'll find something or you'll find a part of the party that you've recruited becomes upset with one of your decisions. And then you have a huge roster of people. And some of those people split off, or they die. Like, if they die, like, all the way, like, there's a chance you can completely lose them. And there are certain story choices where you lose certain characters altogether, which means they're not part of the story, you no longer level them up, they have no impact on the outcome of anything. So I did the import save, it worked very flawlessly, and then it pulled in my group that I'd had at the time, which had a very interesting group I've been playing with, horsemen from the, when I say horsemen, centaurs, basically, from Banner Saga 2. So I pulled in all of them with all the items that I'd found in the last game and all of that shit, which I thought was really fucking cool. It seems like they've added some additional abilities to get you past, like, level 10, because before you'd cap out at level 10, well, the story's getting longer in the tail, or the banner. All those characters are there, and all the way the backstory had already played out is all there. And it's fairly nuanced, the combat. Like, you have a armor rating and a strength rating. And say you have a strength of 9, and the enemy has an armor level of 6, then you're going to do 3 damage. So the idea is to whittle down the armor so it has less of an impact, so that you can go ahead and hit them more. You use... There's basically like limit breaks of a sort that let you do extra damage or extra armor break or extra whatever based on the ability you're using. But overall, like, I'm super fucking impressed. Like, it dove right in to battle, cutscene, battle, battle, cutscene, battle, switch groups, battle, cutscene. Like, it is moving along pretty quick. And so in like 4 hours, I've probably done probably 15 battles, it feels like, at this point.
Yeah, that's...
And they're all very intense. And it does this other thing, which I can't remember if they did in 2, where you can get, you're basically wagering to get a better item out of the fight. And so it's wave-based, but you can switch reinforcements based on who's there. So if you got somebody that's mostly dead, you can switch them out for a fresh troop. And fortunately, since I have such a large roster, I have a lot of choices. But it might do 3 waves, and it might be like 15 enemies. So you kind of switch. You could risk it and have a lot of wounded people, which are going to take several days to heal, or you could just take them down and leave. But that also have a story impact because you didn't finish the battle. Wow. So, there's a lot of nuance to the game. I feel like if you're into Final Fantasy Tactics and you really like hand-drawn art, and you like Vikings that don't necessarily follow the lore that strictly,
it's pretty close.
That game is really fucking cool.
World Eating Snake? That definitely screams Norse.
Yeah. But yeah, Banner Saga 3 so far, you know, I had way too early to call how good or bad the game is. We're talking about game length or whatever. Typically, those games were like 12 to 20 hours long, depending on how you played it. So they're not super, super long, but super high quality. Much in the way that Octopath is very visually striking,
yep,
along with a high-quality game and story, Banner Saga, I feel like, is right up that alley. Just definitely different art.
They just use the old-style animation, and that has a very specific visual style, too. I've always loved the look of Banner Saga, but for some reason, I just couldn't get into Banner Saga 1. And because I couldn't get into Banner Saga 1, it just kind of snowballed on Banner Saga 2 and now Banner Saga 3. So what I'm going to need to do is just sit down and, you know,
like really finish Octopath. Like, that would be a good starting point. See if I can get through 1.
Yeah.
And honestly, once you get in a little bit, you'll understand the 2 main characters quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Understand their motivations and what they do. I mean, essentially, they're loners. They kind of rise to a point of prominence, but they're not the central people in the story. They are and they aren't. Like, they're the main people that continue the story. And you play the story, you understand what I mean. But they aren't ultimately good or ultimately bad. But you can make them kind of that way, too. Jason, did you play anything this week?
Same thing I've been playing for the last couple weeks. The two nights I did play.
Pinky in the Brain.
Pinky in the Brain?
Is that what you're thinking, too? Same thing we do every night.
Same thing we do every night, Pinky.
Take over the world.
Try to take over the world.
Ah, Pinky in the Brain. It doesn't hold up anymore, though. If you ever watch it. Yeah, if you try watching it nowadays, it's like, oh, okay.
I mean, I was a teenager.
It was all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't really hold up much anymore.
But.
I really haven't done a whole lot of new. I've got about halfway through the last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one that's on Netflix. So,
yeah.
Oh, man, I binged the crap out of that. It was good. I liked it.
Oh, yeah. The Kree.
Yeah. It's fucking amazing.
Fucking Kree.
This is the, refresh my memory. This is the one with the robot duplicates, right?
No.
Oh, shit.
This is the newest one.
Okay.
After that.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure I was looking at it.
Speaking of that, I started playing Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale game.
Yeah?
That seems pretty all right so far. Soundtrack is spot on.
Of course it's going to be.
It borrows a lot from the movie. I'm sure they spent a shitload on that. The voice actors are definitely not the same. Right. They have the same spirit. They're getting the same type of attitude and everything else. They try to make them sound kind of like them, but it's not the same people.
Well, you kind of have to understand.
Did you really expect that, though? I mean,
you knew it was going to happen, but
you're not going to get Chris Pratt and Zoe I always trip over her last name, so I'm not even going to try.
Names. Everybody knows about my name problem.
And you're not going to get the guy who voices Rocket. I forget it. Bradley Cooper.
Okay.
You're not going to get those guys, right? And you don't need Vin Diesel for Groot.
Right.
No, everybody can do Groot.
Because everybody can do Groot.
But there's a part of the story so far where Groot is hungover, and he's just throwing up, and it says, Groot.
But, I mean, you're just not going to get those people. Telltale's not going to be able to pay them enough.
But the visual quality, though, has been a huge change, too. Like, I'm really impressed with, like, there's, like, Teslaization and shit. Like, it's very much cel-shaded, but, like, the textures have texture. And that's kind of a weird thing in a Telltale game.
Well,
like, the visual fidelity, and then I tried playing it in 4K, and I was like, this really looks good.
Yeah. Just think about how far Telltale has come from where, you know, from where they started. First
Walking Dead game really kind of pushed them over the edge.
Right. That, just knowing... off Windows Defender. Just seeing where they came from, like, I played the crap out of the first season of Walking Dead on Telltale, and I enjoyed what they did with it. It was kind of, you know, I kind of played it just like choose your own adventure style game, and it reminded me a lot about those books that you picked up when you were a kid, old style fucking choose your own adventure books.
When you're in the mood, those games really work. And I was thinking about, I was talking with the girl person about this, but like, she really likes
the girl person.
She really likes the Batman in general. So I was talking about playing through the
girl person,
through the Batman games, because they have a crowd play option. I've been wanting to try that for a while. You download an app on your phone, and you can kind of fight over the decision on what to make when it comes up, or any of the button prompts.
Oh, yeah, like Pokemon Plays, almost?
I guess.
Switch Plays Pokemon, or whatever?
Yeah, so, like, it's color-coded, and it's in a little, like, wheel, and you just click the color corresponding with the choice. So there's a whole voting mechanism for that.
Those are the games to do it. The action scenes would be kind of bad. Like, I remember a couple of the situations where you actually have to, you know, like, fire a rifle or whatever, shoot a gun. They do
better with this and that there wasn't anything I had to manually aim shooting-wise. A couple of times I had to manually aim to grab something in midair, but for the most part, like, it just said, click your triggers, essentially.
Right.
And so when, what's Chris Pratt's character's name now?
Star-Lord,
right.
Oh my god, that fits so well, too. What's your name again?
Right.
Who?
Star-Lord, you know? But yeah, like, you just click the triggers when he's shooting stuff, and you just click them as fast as you can, and then it shoots, you know?
Okay.
But a lot of cool action scenes, and it starts off a little bit slow, and then it dives really hard into it. Both of the action scenes with the dialogue and everything else. Like, it's been really interesting so far. So, sweet. I mean, I got the season pass for it on Steam sale for, like, $14. So, like, there's no reason why I shouldn't dig my way through this.
Right. It's another Telltale game.
I mean, $14 for about 12 hours worth of gameplay is pretty all right.
It's okay. Yeah. I mean, if you bring it down to dollars per hour situation, but it would be a quality Telltale game. It's kind of,
well, by that the time experience. I finish it, I'll be able to tell
the tale.
Yeah,
but I've got a lot of my backlog, and
the Telltale games are they're great experiences for the most part.
Yeah, it just depends on what you're in the mood for. Like, when I'm in the mood to kind of, like, watch Netflix, but I want to have more interaction, like, a Telltale game is pretty all right for that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. I know that they're going forward with the final season of The Walking Dead on Telltale.
Yeah, I think that's this month, isn't it?
Yeah, it's coming out fairly soon. Yeah,
and once that's completed, they're doing the new Wolf Among Us.
Yeah, I heard about that. Fucking happen.
I think that's a 2019 release, isn't it?
Yeah. That, 2019 or 2020.
But I'm one of those guys that can't play those for 4 hours and then wait 4 months.
Right, you kind of binge them just like... So, just like Netflix.
I'm going to wait until they're all released before I pick it up.
Right. You know, it's going to be that way for me because that's how I played The Wolf Among Us the first time. And I just imagined what it would be like between the episodes, just sitting there waiting.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Not a big fan of episodic games, but
those play out like a TV show, so it kind of works. And honestly, when you think about like what's best out of all the stuff they've done, that first Batman game is definitely good.
Oh, yeah.
Wolf Among Us is really good, and Walking Dead Season 1 are really good. Walking Dead Season 2 is also pretty good. Season 3 is stronger in parts and not as strong in other parts. It's a really weird mixed bag of being like on or above par or below par, either of those two games. Yeah. It's a really interesting... It's because none of the characters, for the most part, you don't play any of the characters you played in any of the other games. It's a new family. And so because you're missing the connection you had, even though that connection weaves in and out, it's just not as strong. But there's another game that me and you have both been dicking around with a little bit.
Is this the one you think? Is this the one I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
Okay.
We both tried out No Man's Sky.
Again.
And there's been some
No Man's Sky next, right?
That's what they named the patch. It is still No Man's Sky. The thing is for the first time, I didn't regret actually downloading and starting playing it. In fact, I'm going to go home tonight, and I'm probably going to poop sock that over the next few days. Because there has been a number of changes. If you played No Man's Sky, if you got caught up into the hype of, you know, of No Man's Sky just like I did, just like we all did, really, at the very beginning, and was, you know, severely disappointed and stopped playing after a couple, you know, a week or so, go back, play this game, and everything that you remember from the No Man's Sky experience that you had before, forget it. Just throw it out the fucking window.
I think Sean Murray, as much as besides all the shit he had to deal with, I feel like he's redeeming himself so far. I'm having a decent time with it. There's enough mystery to the game to keep it interesting, but like, I'm sitting and scanning things. I'm like having to build all those extra items that I didn't really need before.
Right.
I'm having to, like, the mobile forge thing, which was something I don't remember at all.
No, it's fairly new.
But just the... Like, I'm not that far in. Like, maybe 3 hours. I've done the basic quest stuff to figure out how to repair my ship and move to another planet.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm working on getting fuel, but I keep getting distracted by other just things.
All the things. So, I've put in about, I want to say 11 or 12 hours, into this game. Started completely fresh.
I did too.
And
I may try joining one of your games at some point.
I have not tried the multiplayer. I still don't know how that's going to work. But I can tell you that I've gone through the process of repairing the ship, and going for, you know, trying to get into the quest line, because I want to see what changed there. But what I've found is that the first 5 or 6 hours you spend just in one system, you spend a lot of time on the first few planets. And if you get the wrong fucking roll, random roll for where you start, suck for you.
I got toxic planet first roll.
Uh-huh.
Then I re-rolled it. Then I got super hot planet second roll.
Right.
But then it told me how to make the shield for that. And it's fairly simple. I just need to keep the materials on me if it gets too low.
Right.
Or I just need to dig a hole for a minute to get out of whatever's going on.
Digging a hole. So The one of the best things that they did with this game is they added the terrain manipulator. Basically allows you to dig holes into the terrain or make things, you know, out of thin air, basically. They use that as a replacement for your mining laser if you have in-ground deposits for, like, copper and whatnot. You can use that to mine it. And the difference, the different items that you can pick up, the different kind of elements that you can use to build things, is why you need to completely throw out everything you knew about No Man's Sky before, because the elements have changed, you know, quite a bit. It requires certain, you know, a stockpile of certain things to be able to, you know, to do the kinds of repairs. Getting exosuit upgrades actually requires you to repair the drop pod so that you can get it. So it's not just find a drop pod and automatically get a exosuit upgrade for a storage spot. You have to have the materials to make it, which sometimes leads you on a little bit of a mini quest to go and pick up the required materials from nearby so that you can, you know, refine it and manufacture the part that you need for the drop pod. These little things make it a lot better for me. Like, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. It was really easy that the first week or so to max out your exosuits, storage, and just go forward. And then getting units was the hard part, because you wanted to be able to find or buy a better ship.
I didn't start off with a pre-order bonus ship either. I went ahead and started with whatever the base experience ship was to figure out how to do this.
Yeah, and I ended up, you know, using the pre-order bonus ship because I was one of those people. But the pre-order bonus ship is really not that much better than what you get for the base ship. The big things that, you know, that you can see here is the crafting, like the base building is far and away better than the time that I spent with it right after they introduced base building. Right. Like the first base was just a bunch of round prefab rooms, and you just connect them.
Yep.
The very first base that you make in the game, which is built into a, you know, into a quest, is a wooden hut.
I haven't gotten that far.
And you put down the wooden foundation, snap four walls to it, and put on a roof. It made me immediately connect to the Ark style building, because it had sections of wall and you could kind of make it the way that you know any way that you wanted to. I thought that it worked a whole lot better as far as the snap mechanics for the walls than what I saw in Ark. So I'm really interested to be able to find the right planet, which I've not found a good, lush, pretty planet to, you know, to put stuff down on. But I really kind of want to get into the base building, because that was the whole reason why I liked Ark.
Well, and then I can jump in and check out your base or whatever, right?
Right. So the next thing that I found is, as I'm going through, you know, the base building is great, but basically it says build a base through this in here. This is how you get new base blueprints, basically. And then it says go to the stars again. So you tear down what you can and you move on, right? Well, the very next system you get into, if it tells you that there is a freighter under attack, even if you haven't done any type of upgrades to your ship, go and attack those pirates. Because what happened with me is the very first time you do a freighter rescue, the freighter captain will contact you, you know, on the ship comms and say, board the freighter, I need to talk to you. And when you talk to the captain, he's like, I'm done with this bullshit. I really don't want to be a freighter captain anymore. Here's the keys. And gives you a whole fucking freighter, which is your mobile base. You build everything that you want to build, you know, for refining and things like that inside the freighter. You dock with the freighter, and then you fly the freighter to the next system.
Interesting.
And then on that freighter, you can, as you go along, I haven't found any myself, but as you go along, you'll get frigates that you can purchase, and you have those frigates go out and do, like, the side missions. So NPC time-based missions, you send them off to do a trade run or something like that, and they come back and give you units or resources or, you know, or things of that nature. So you That's can have...
I like to be given units.
Right. Yeah. So you get a lot of extra just let them do their own thing. They have a difficulty meter, so you have to captain. You have to have the right captain and the right ship to be able to go do a certain thing. There's ones for trading, for combat, and so on. But when they're not on a mission, they're following your freighter around. So when you jump to the next system, you will jump in, and then all the other frigates will come in with you, which is kind of neat. The freighter also allows, and it's the easiest way for multiplayer, to get everybody in one spot and then jump to the right system. Because the way that the Starfield works in No Man's Sky is that people could jump to the wrong fucking system and lose each other.
Right.
But if you get everybody into the freighter, let them all dock into the freighter, and then, you know, use the freighter to jump, it brings everybody with you. So that's really, it's really neat. I have only just gotten the freighter and started playing around with, you know, the customizations, you know, on the freighter, but I'm kind of really looking for the right world to build a proper base and then set up a portal, which you can access from any station. There is a portal device that you can go up to, and it will send you to any base that you have registered. And of course, those bases are persistent in the, you know, on the game server. So even if you're not friended with somebody, somebody could randomly come across your base. You know, so of course you want to name the fucking space pickles or whatever fucking animals are on that planet, and you know, right. You can name your base and whatnot, and they can use some of the stuff that you've left outside. So if you've got the mobile refineries or the save points, you can put those out there, and they can use those.
I want to say one more thing before we move on. The space pickles seem to have a lot better variety this time around.
Yes, so,
and I ran across some that were very, very large.
Yes.
So there was a good variety of things that were creepy crawly and small, and then it randomly generated this weird creature that had a really long neck, like bull's horn, like ram's horns, and then hands that were long and spindly like a human's hands. And it was a really weird creature, but it was also like four times as big as me.
Right.
And then like butterfly creatures. Like, I was like, this is a weird mix on this planet.
There was one that I had named Dragon Stork. Was a reptilian that had really, really long legs, like three-fingered toes, really long legs, and had a kind of a bulbous body, but a longer neck, some horns, and it had little tiny wings on it.
And it is like, okay, this is a dragon stork. This has to be.
So I think maybe next week we'll talk a little bit more about what we've kind of gotten from the game, or if it's still worth it in a week, because we'll, I think we'll know.
I think that this iteration of No Man's Sky is what it should have been. It sucks that we had to wait 2 years for it, but it's one of those situations where you just need to throw away everything that you remember from the old No Man's Sky and give it another try. There is a reason why there is a decent amount of people on Steam concurrently playing on it right now. I think it's the number 6 game right now. It's beating out Rainbow Six Siege, concurrent player base.
Right.
You know, in its first week, considering if you look at the graph of players before Next dropped and after Next dropped, it was flatlined with maybe 50 people playing or whatever, and it's up to now like 60K or something like that. So, and it hasn't, it's only started, it's only been going up as the news has gone out saying this release isn't shit. Go for it. Try it again. You know, so it's worth trying if you haven't picked it up. If you can, you could probably pick it up in a bargain bin pretty quickly.
So that, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back.
Alrighty. We'll be back.
And we're back from break.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
Just in time for everybody's favorite segment. The news.
That's really not the favorite segment. There was a lot of build up. Everybody's favorite segment.
The news. And it's like, a short episode too, so we're like, yeah, we were actually discussing a break, like, all right, so how much is actually relevant right now?
Not a lot.
Not a whole lot.
Though so, it is time, this is the time of year where the games start to ramp back up. We're getting to the end of the summertime.
You know what comes out in 2 weeks?
Hmm.
So it's a 2D side-scrolling game, kind of like Salt and Sanctuary, made by Adult Swim, called Death's Gambit, that's supposed to have, like, real large multi-stage boss battles and stuff like that. Kind of a Metroidvania, kind of hard, like, I'm not going to use Souls, but let's say it's like Salt and Sanctuary.
Get the Dark Souls reference in there. Bring it up.
Because we got to bring it up at least once per episode.
There's my ones for.
But yeah, Death's Gambit comes out on August 14th, and I think if you're into some of that kind of stuff, at least go watch the videos. You can see a lot of the videos online already for it. Yeah. It's something I've been following for a very long time. Another game, if you're into that kind of stuff, that'll come out probably this year is called Eiter, EITER, which is a isometric RPG with a lot of timing-based combat. Multiple skills and things like that. It's kind of based on the same theory as a Souls game of it's all timing based. Your enemy's attack patterns are always going to be the same, but you need to learn different enemy attack patterns to beat it.
Sweet.
So, but Eiter is more of less of a Super Nintendo looking game and more of a really sharp Nintendo looking game, kind of like Risk of Rain. So that whole phase that Nintendo went through right before Super Nintendo launched, or right after Super Nintendo launched, where the sprites were really bright, but still low poly. So it's kind of got that kind of look to it as well, but also a very dark feel.
Sweet.
So those are kind of two things to be looking out for. And other releases that will be coming out soon. Two things. One that I can't quite justify or afford right now because I really want to play more... Enter the Gungeon, because a new update came out for that. But
Enter the Gungeon. Is it Gungeons and Dragons?
Gungeons and Dragons was the big update that they released. At free DLC. Thanks to Devolver Digital.
Nice.
But there's another game kind of like that in a 3D space called Super Mother Gunship. That is a roguelite
with these names, man.
It's a bullet, I know, right? It's a bullet hell game where you kind of custom craft all your weapons.
Sweet.
That's like $25, I think, right now.
Every so often, I enjoy myself like 5 minutes of a bullet hell because that's about as far as I get before I die.
Well, and I got so much on the backlog. Like, I need to play Vampire some more, and that game's really good. And I need to go out and get me a 2.0 HDMI cable tomorrow to see if I can get HDR to work on the TV from the PC.
There you go.
So I can kind of force it into doing some HDR.
Do it! Do it!
Beat Saber.
Beat Saber!
There was a story that went out, I want to say on The Verge a couple days ago.
Yeah?
That said it is nearly one-to-one with PC on PSVR.
Okay.
And PSVR being the more accessible of all the VR-ness.
Right.
Sounds really cool. Also, PS4 Pro Enhanced.
Nice.
To help with some of the resolution on it.
I
will be getting Beat Saber, and we will be playing Beat Saber yes. in the living room.
Yes! Yes! Fucking yes!
Now, All I'm saying is rhythmic lightsabers, baby.
Dude, but I can't wait. I really, really want to play this game. I'm going to look like a fucking fool playing it, but good God, is it going to be fun.
It looks cool as shit. And I am really into that. I mean, I've got other games like that I haven't even dug into. I've got Doom VFR, and I tried that a little bit the other day. Actually controlled a lot better than I expected it to. So, I've got a lot of shit to play, and plenty of time to do it.
Sweet. Oh, man. If Beat Saber is good, like, if I get an opportunity to play it here, and it's good.
You can get your vibe.
It will be that one extra thing that's going to tell me it's time. It's time to go VR. I would have to really redo my apartment, but...
I've been watching a lot of videos, so like currently the vibe's out. Like, they expect more stock here in a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
I say a couple days. August 2nd, which is like Thursday of next week. But vibe's way low on price right now.
Yeah, it's getting more and more accessible.
$400 is not that much. That's $150 more than a PSVR. And as long as you don't have a total potato of a PC, you should be able to run most of the VR stuff out there. Now, to get it to run really well, you do need a little bit of workhorse from PC.
I get a workhorse from PC.
But it'll say it'll run it. It says that it'll run it on a 970. And a 970 is an old card.
Yeah. No, I've got a beefy PC. We can make this happen.
Yeah, I was watching the setup for the Vive versus the Oculus, and basically all you do is you set up the two lighthouses wherever you want,
uh-huh.
as long as they have like a diagonal view of the play space.
Yeah.
And then you take the controller and walk it around in a square where you want your play space to be, and then it will go semi-transparent and let you see things that are in your way from the front-facing camera that's on the VR headset, so you don't run out of the space, but it lets you walk around in that space.
Nice.
So that's selling it pretty hard for me.
Yeah. No, I'm already thinking about just completely ditching the furniture that's in my living room and going that route.
Well, I'm noticing this even so with PSVR, you have to have a pretty large field of view. And honestly, if you can stand 5 or 6 feet away from your TV, it works just fine. And that's where my issues have always been is...
You're too close to it.
I'm always too close to it. So I'm fucking blind, but it doesn't matter in VR. So I end up pushing my table all the way back. I've got a coffee table and a chair. And I usually move that all the way back. And once I'm about 5 feet away, everything seems to work more or less fine.
Yeah. The way that my living room is currently set up is I've got my seat really fucking close to the TV because when I'm docked, you know, when the Switch is docked, the Joy-Cons don't have the greatest of range. So I have to be really fairly close to my dock for the Switch for it to actually pick it up. I don't have a Pro controller. So that's why my living room is basically bisected by a freaking love seat at the moment.
So, did you have any other news that you wanted to kind of talk about?
Well, I've been watching some of the some things. You had posted a thing in our little group to
our little
to
top watch. Secret group.
Yeah, our top secret. We share sweet nothings to each other. The thing that we say it like that. Sweet nothings. Yes. you had thrown up a Kickstarter that that actually got me really interested in it. The Kickstarter is for Binding of Isaac card game called Four Souls. Kind of like a Munchkin is how I kind of looked at it. But it's well shot past its
$50,000 goal.
$50,000 funding goal. It finally closed. It brought in $2,650,000.
That's why I didn't donate to it. It's like way past funded.
It's way past funded. So there was a lot of stuff. Of course, the Kickstarter is closed, so you can't get in on the early bird stuff yet or anymore. But creator is Edmund McMillan, and he had a live stream for the last day where he was answering people's questions, and I watched a few minutes of that, and it's pretty exciting. I liked how he was able to get things to work and be able to describe, like, you know, the cards and the combos and right. what all the, you know, the characters, each character has a different ability that you can kind of either help or, you know, actually turn the tables on your, on the other people who are playing. Kind of like Munchkin. It's kind of help or stab them in the back kind of thing, right? But it's all based in the Binding of Isaac,
mythos,
that little world. You'll have characters that you recognize, items that you recognize, monsters that you'll recognize, and then you'll have boss battles where you have to, you have to be able to, get through those. And the whole idea behind the game is to be able to collect four souls, and at that point you'll win the game. But there are cards that you can use against your fellow players that will either steal or get rid of their souls, or you'll kill their character and they have to kind of start over. And he's got tokens that are pennies from the game, shaped just like the game. It looks really fantastic. I would have dropped some money on it if Justin had asked, had said something. I asked him if he was going to get on it while the Kickstarter was still open, but he didn't answer me, and I didn't want to drop money on a box of these cards if he had already done so. So we'll have to wait. I think they're coming out like November-ish, something like that.
That's fine.
Later on this year, but it looks fantastic. Check out the Kickstarter. He's got a lot of good information there. The art's really, really good. So looking forward to that.
The art really looked like the game, but then on a certain level, it looked like it was taking it up a notch.
Well, I mean, it goes down to even, like, the font that he used on each one of the characters is exactly the same font from the game. You know, there's these little details that you get, from the cards that are just, it's nice. It's good. I like it.
Minor correction on prior story. Eitr is EITR and does look a little better than I thought. This is gameplay from it.
Okay.
So you can see isometric, somewhat 3D, but not quite, right?
Okay. Like
it's all timing-based combat, a lot of blocking and a lot of dodging and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. That's not bad looking.
Like, it's,
That is...
And then large bosses.
Oh, yeah. I love the large boss, thing. It's so Super Nintendo.
Yeah, it's more Super Nintendo than Nintendo, for sure.
Yeah, the art style looks really good.
It's being released by Devolver.
God, Devolver is just getting there. And they,
like, if you like anything small, like, fucking...
Devolver has their style down, and they build their games unapologetically. They do what they want. And each game has its own little thing. Yep. I mean, sure, it's hard to take a game developer seriously when they've got, genital jousting, right?
I need to get you guys to play that with me. I mean, not in real life. It's pretty entertaining.
Like I said, I'd win.
But it is kind of hard to take Devolver Digital really seriously when you've got that kind
of... No, but they make finely tuned games and a lot of highly stylized games. And they just are what they are. Like, Enter the Gungeon has got a shit... Like, I was playing with the new TV on the Twitch app, and there's like 100 people streaming Enter the Gungeon because it's not an easy game.
Right.
But it is definitely a hyper-stylized game with a very... with very... big core mechanics, and like they do really good on, hey, here's a core mechanic. Now, we don't give a fuck about the story,
right?
But here's some core mechanics that work in games, and the handful of people they do that come up with the concepts for all this shit is fucking amazing. And the studios that they sign on to do some of the small work that they do is really good. Like Ruiner, like I played that last year. It did make my game of the year, but like overall, it's a shortish game, but it is fucking solid as hell.
Right. It's just,
and it wasn't so hard that I couldn't play it, but holy hell, it took me about 2 hours to figure out the timing on how things worked to get down past the first boss battle. And after I figured that out, the rest of the game kind of opened up, and then I was like, oh, I get it now. But it's definitely one of those games that you kind of have to play in short bursts until you get frustrated, and you need to complete it in a couple weeks, because going back... Let me tell you, I went back to like a save 2/3 of the way through the game.
Yeah,
not even happening.
And that seems to be a thing for Devolver games, is that aha moment, like, oh, I get it now. And then you start learning and getting good at that mechanic.
Except for Enter the Gungeon, I never passed the third board.
That's just because
that game is really hard.
Not only is it really hard, but I mean,
it's really hard in a Ghosts and Goblins kind of way, like in a super Ghosts and Goblins kind of way.
Fuck that game.
That game is so fucking hard.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Wow.
It's one of the best mistranslations ever.
Congratulations. Wait, that was bad. They did it.
So that's the Binding of Isaac story I had. There was one thing that just kind of came across my screen that looked really freaking cool. Just a trailer that came out not too long ago for Atomic Heart. Never heard of this game. Haven't seen anything from it. But if you can imagine a cross between Fallout, Nier Automata, BioShock... And what was the other one that we talked about?
You said Metro, but I see less Metro. I see Metro only in the fact that it's
got some trains and it has a Russian background music to it.
Oh, weird! I'm looking at another summary of it.
Yeah,
looks like someone scrapped BioShock, Fallout, Metro 2033 for parts.
See, I told you. I told you.
It's being made by a Russian company called Munfish.
Munfish. I don't know. It looks really fantastic, and there is a point in the trailer where he fucking spears somebody with a pipe and then lifts him up, and the body slides down the pipe, and he just pulls the fucking pipe out of his back. Right. I am like, whoa. All right. I mean, you remember the first time I played fucking Wolfenstein, and we used the fucking pipe to stab people in the neck and have blood spurt out the other side of the pipe.
Blood.
Like,
That was
fucking fantastic.
Like, God, it's so fucking cool.
You know, it's just one of those little moments that just like,
oh yeah,
that's fucking
most
brutal.
Most brutal melee weapon of the last 10 years.
Right.
A pipe.
A broken pipe.
Because the fucking, it's like it taps the blood in the brain and it just drains out the pipe.
It was pretty amazing.
Over the top, but that's what you expect from Wolfenstein, right? So
that's keep that series going.
So that looks really cool.
Yeah.
To touch on something Rusty kind of touched on earlier. So when the next update for No Man's Sky released, the player base on Steam automatically went to over 40,000 concurrent players.
Last time I checked, it was 65.
Right, but I'm saying this is like within hours of release.
I mean, I jumped into it like 2 days later from like 50.
Yeah.
Well, it's flatlined.
Which, I mean, that doubled what Atlas Rises pulled. Atlas Rises, the first major update, only pulled about 20,000.
But Atlas Rises, all they did really was introduce some of the building mechanics for that, and it wasn't really great. Like, I tried it after Atlas Rises.
I looked at my last save. My last save was August 17th of 2017.
Right.
Right. You know,
but I tried Atlas Rises. I didn't like it. There was a point where I got in there and I'm like, okay, this is kind of a gimmick.
We both said it doesn't add enough. It's like,
it didn't change enough of the game. And it just didn't feel complete still. It just didn't have that completeness. Now, with the extra quests,
it felt more like a mid-range patch than it did a full update.
Right. And with Next being well-rounded, adding some basically random gen quests, some reasons to do things, that adds a lot. And then being able to really kind of go out, find things, repair things, and then add them to your things. You can have multiple ships now. You know, I didn't know if that was, you know, something from a previous patch that I just missed, but you can have multiple ships now. Just remember, if you do find a ship and you want to keep that fucker, repair it to the point where it can at least fly. I found an S-class ship that was just random, you know, abandoned fucking S-class ship. And I didn't have the materials to repair the engines or anything at that time. And I said, oh, well, I'll just save it and come back to it. I can't find that fucker now. So, and I'm gonna try to find it, but I don't know how. You know, that's one of the things that I'm still trying to learn from this. But yeah, Next is fucking fantastic, guys. It's everything that No Man's Sky really should have been in the first place. Give it a go.
So I just thought it was interesting that the newest patch did double the whole of the last
one. I'm interested to see if it can get up to six figures. Yeah. If it can get up to 100.
And I'm also interested to see, now granted, these numbers haven't been released yet, but I'm interested to see what the pull was on PS4.
Oh, well, I mean, there's a decent, I'm sure that there's a decent amount of people playing it on PS4, because that's where it initially dropped, right? So, and of course, it came out on Xbox, and I saw some other random news article here that showed that if you are playing it in 4K on the Xbox One X, it looks fantastic, and it runs at 60 frames. I can tell you that it was running 60 frames on my PC for a while. When I say for a while, there's still a memory leak somewhere. After about, I don't know, 6 hours or so, I started to see it slow down. But, right. I mean, 6 hours of gameplay in that, you know, games in one stretch without shutting the game down at all, it's still a lot. I mean, I'm supposed to take a break every couple hours, right?
Well, random bit of news right now. Let me see if it's on Xbox One. It runs 4K HDR on PS4 Pro. So that's something to look forward to that I may try out.
Okay.
Because you have a new 4K HDR TV.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and on Xbox One X, it is
Also,
Far Cry 5 is beautiful.
Yeah, we tried out a little bit of that. I've shown Jason like the difference with, because we played it in 4K, and then we had some kind of weird handshake issue.
Yeah.
And then we tried it again with HDR enabled on the Mars expansion, and the rocks really pop.
They really pop.
Yeah, and it looks fantastic.
The HDR texture is just deepened. It's like,
well, that and just 4K, like, there's just not a lot of pixels you can see.
Right. No, I really like the, you know, the fact that they're pushing resolution on games. I mean, right now, the video cards are barely hanging on, you know, to 4K and HDR support. Like, it really pushes even current graphics cards. That, of course, is going to get better over time, because, you know, as games start adding those features to them, you know, for being able to render that kind of resolution, the video card manufacturers are gonna step up. I know NVIDIA is working that into their GTX 11 series, so that it'll have more HDR support and be able to have more frames per second on 4K.
Well, I think for now, just until I'm a rich man, it's probably going to be a 1080 Ti or a 1070 Ti, which is what I'm going to end up getting.
That's perfectly fine. Like, I have no problems running any game that I want to right now in HD. Now, because I don't have a 4K monitor or anything, but running anything I want to in HD at maximum. And that's good enough for me for right now. I don't necessarily need the 4K because, you know, it for me, it's just extra money for something that's not quite ready. It's technically possible, but not quite to the point where I would want to
PC anyway.
Yeah, transition everything over to
it. I think 1X and PS4 Pro are doing pretty well in the 4K territory.
When you're looking at, you know, gaming, you know, 4K gaming monitors that are as expensive or more expensive than the TV you just bought, that's kind of, you know, that's what's putting me off.
27-inch G-Sync 120Hz NVIDIA monitor made by Asus is like $1,000.
Right.
And 27 inches.
There's, and they're coming out with a
65-inch 120Hz G-Sync TV.
And I can only imagine what the fucking price will be on that bitch.
Like an economy car.
Right. You're gonna put, like, I'm gonna put the fucking, I don't know why I started. it's gonna be like fucking $5,000 or $6,000. It just made my credibility go, like, oh shit.
Do we have any other news?
Not that I could really find. I mean, there's just not really much out there right now, but we're kind of in the second lull of the year right now as far as
news. We'll continue to play plenty of games. You guys will hear more about No Man's Sky next week and more about Banner Saga and what I think of it. On top of something, I'll try to pick up something else along the way, either playing something or just finding something, but there's not enough coming out me to do that. So
I'm probably gonna end up picking up the Mega Man X collection. There's some it's mixed Steam reviews right now. There's a lot of people hating on it because it's basically the Mega Man X ROMs put all together into a collection, and it includes the old Super Nintendo slowdowns, which is kind of a classic thing. It's not necessarily a feature, but the Super Nintendo, it was really pushing what the Super Nintendo could do as far as sprites on the screen. It would slow down after a bit. So the new collection includes those, which really kind of points out the fact that it is it's just a ROM emulator collection. But people were saying that there was some issues with input lag, which would be fucking a game killer with that kind of game.
Mega Man is very, very much a responsive game of dodging things.
Right. So I'm going to be testing it out. I'm picking it up on Steam because I want the digital license. I want to be able to download that game whenever I want to. And
I'm just planning on, you know, throwing an Xbox controller on the PC and seeing how fast it is. If there's input lag, I'll let you know. I don't think there is. It's conflicting reports, and of course, there's going to be purists out there that say you can't get the same feel unless you actually pick an SNES controller up and, you know, slam the cartridge in gently. Don't blow into it. but yeah, don't follow the Steam reviews because a lot of the downvotes are because of the input lag thing, and I think that is something that could be easily fixed with a patch.
So, right.
If there is even a problem. I'm just thinking it's a bunch of people hating on it.
So with that, Jason, where can you find us? Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/TheRealTiltcast and search for us on iTunes.
Find friends of the show for the love of gaming. Cabbage KBG.
Cabbage.
The Carousel Podcast.
Podcast.
NoQuarters.net. BMFcast.com. And TVGP.TV. They still do videos.
They're still alive.
Doing stuff and things. It's still good.
Alrighty.
Alright.
Peace.